that is what's going to make this country great again, right? Our products, everything we do, American made. There's mm-hmm. nothing that comes from outside.
So
this
tell
country.
Us about that. Tell us about the products that you're making, right? And right here in Texas.
Yes.
And so I mean, you're from New York.
I'm from New York. I'm sorry.
But he's immigrated to Texas. Yeah. We're still processing his paperwork.
Thank you.
And he's looking pretty good for him. So tell us about the products and where it's made, who's making it, and the why behind it.
Okay, so we have one, I'll say, proprietary product, and that's the Assess Board. I call it the Assess Board. It's the Active Shooter Evacuation or Escape Security Shield, which is essentially, it's a ballistic dry erase board. It's 24 square feet of mobile ballistic protection.
Okay.
It hides in plain sight, so it looks like it belongs in a classroom or a boardroom or a conference room. There's nothing tactical about it.
Okay.
It was designed to be totally subdued.
Well, it has wheels.
It does have
so
wheels.
So that makes it tactical.
It makes it tactical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be fair, this was like my idea. It was my response to Uvalde watching an officer with a ballistic shield in the hallway, rounds going off, going through walls, you know, and my heart was just turning in my chest because I have twins. At the time, my twins were 10 years old, and I'm a pretty prepared dude, but I could not get to my kid's school in the event of an emergency fast enough before, statistically speaking, that emergency event would be over.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm thinking buy time. That's what I'm thinking, which is the training and all the impetus behind it and the motivation behind it is buying time, sustaining life long enough until somebody with a higher degree of training, care, you know, whatever that is, can get there and take over, okay. Right? And mindset. So I look at this tragedy and I'm like, what could I have done potentially to have bought the kids some more time while everybody was figuring things out? I'm like, the police have ballistic shields, right? They're not utilizing them. They weren't utilizing them to go in and put down the threat. Why can't my kids at least have something to hide behind? If they're locking down in the classroom and they got nowhere to go, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. At least give them something to hide behind when they're in there. So also during COVID, I became an amateur welder with plenty of time on my hands. I had a buddy who had a welding shop. I picked scraps up off the floor. I saw what happened in Uvalde. I had actually installed a ballistic window for a meditation center in Manhattan.
Okay.
So I remembered the name of the company that made the ballistic acrylic. It's not glass.
Sure.
And I called them up and I was like, hey, you don't know me, but I'm putting something together and I need some ballistic acrylic because initially I thought I was going to make it out of acrylic. And it turns out that the supplier was 30 minutes from my house in Long Island. And they said, oh, we're at such and such location. They go, we have much better material than acrylic for what you're trying to do.
Right.
Come to the office. I went to the office and they showed me ballistic fiberglass, which is a lot lighter, mm-hmm. Different material. It's designed for building, essentially. And I told them the concept and they're like, they didn't roll their eyes, but they were like, sounds ambitious. Let's just say that. And they gave me some ballistic panels and I literally dragged it to the shop and I used scraps off the floor and I cobbled this Frankenstein board together when I saw that it can actually protect 10 adults or 12 adults behind it and I couldn't see them. I was like, okay. I brought it home and then I had my daughter, who at the time had a sprained wrist, was wearing socks like on the tile floor of the basement, and I videotaped her. I'm like, move this board, you know, this is what it does. And I put handles on it. And, you know, it took her a second to get grip on her feet, but she was able to move it by herself. And she was, I don't know, 40 pounds sopping wet at the time. And I'm like, okay, she can move it. I got my son, the twins, and I had them stay behind it and move. And I gave them scenarios to run through. And
how old are your boys?
I have a boy and a girl, so they're now...
Oh, your twins. It's a boy
twins.
And a girl.
Yeah.
Okay, it's okay.
So they're 12 now, so it's just 2 years ago.
Okay.
Anyway, I call up Homeland Security because I have a handler that's managing the grant for this house of worship that I'm in, and I'm like, hey, random question. I know that there's money allocated for target hardening, doors, windows, and the like. I have this thing. I'd like you to evaluate it, right? And they said, sure, no problem. Send me pictures. Send me the specs. Send me everything you have on it. So I had to write up a whole write-up on it. I send it to them. It took 2 days. They got back to me. They go, approved. They didn't even come down and look at it. Really? They just reviewed the photographs, the videos that I sent them, the specs on it. The material is all UL rated.
Right.
It's all NIJ rated,
right.
From a reputable manufacturer. And they were like, love it. And that, again, no different than that first training session.
Sure.
Right? I'm taking shots in the dark. I don't know, honestly, what's going
on. Man, I tell you, sometimes I feel like I'm doing the same. You know, you just got to keep
grinding, But if you don't roll that dice, take those chances, you're never... I can't sit still.
You miss every target you don't shoot at.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, that's
very
the
well
truth.
Said. Very well said. So. Got it approved, and that house of worship actually bought the first one.
Okay.
Sold it at a loss. Again, proof of concept. Right. Number one, I was in their grant, so I wasn't going to profit off of it.
Sure.
So I sold it for less than it actually costs. So there was no question of impropriety or anything like that. We actually lost money on the deal, but they got it for free, and it worked. So essentially, the grant worked. It got covered by Homeland Security. And then after it was bought and installed, then Homeland came and did their annual routine walkthrough. And I was sitting at the table. We're going through. We were installing cameras and access control. And the handler says, hey, is that ballistic dry erase board here? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, can I see it? I'm like, it's in the children's playroom. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I brought her. She's like, Izzy, you got to get this out there. Now, they can't endorse anything.
Right.
But again, it felt vindicating to me in the moment. And that was 2.5 years ago. Look, we talk about what's important in the space and, the priority tree, if you will.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, there's absolutely a space there. You know, it's just for me, it's always like, let's prioritize.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
You know, and I think you agree with that.
Absolutely.
There's a space for a lot of things.
Yes.
It's just the prioritization of that, right?
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And I would say that about a lot of the things that we do. Like, I think what makes Fox 2 Sierra... I don't want to say different, but maybe stand out, is that I don't push anything. We don't push anything.
Mm-hmm.
When we get a consult, I listen. I want to hear what do you perceive your issues are? Where do you think you need help?
That is one of the most important things. I had a conversation with a cybersecurity company yesterday, and they made an attempt to try to do physical security assessments, and admittedly, they failed. And they were, they called me in. We had a conversation about how our team could help them. And that was one of the most important things. They asked me, okay, what's your process? I said, the most important piece initially is to just listen, right? Listen to the client, see what they believe their needs are at two different levels. And what I mean by that is, you talk to the boss, of course, they're gonna have their idea of what they think their needs are. But I want to talk to the boots on the ground. I want to talk to, let's say, K-12. I want to talk to the teachers. I want to talk to the parents. I want to talk to the kids. I want to talk to the first responders. I don't want the superintendent to tell me solely, and it's take that as the gospel, move forward. It's collecting of aggregate data so that I can get a better picture, sight picture, of what the actual need is in conjunction with my own evaluation or my team's evaluation. I told this company yesterday, like, it's like doing an advance, for the President of the United States. Mm-hmm. We sent an advance team out. The advance team's goal is to collect aggregate data from multiple stakeholders so that we can compile a list of the capabilities, the vulnerabilities, so that we can mitigate whatever things that we may encounter. And so, it's a procedural part for me that's important. And that gathering of that information is so important, whether it be through a series of interviews, whether it be through just casual conversations, or whether it be a more formal process of pushing out a survey. One of the things that our team does, I love the surveys, man, because we have those initial conversations with the stakeholders, and they, mm-hmm. They give us their idea of how they feel, like what the pulse of the, their staff is, or what their needs are, and then we get their survey results back, which are completely anonymous, and they're super shocked.
Right.
It's like, oh God, I didn't realize that
right.
these people felt this way. It's like, well, because you're not listening, you're talking to them and you're not listening to them, you know? And so, hey girl. So with Fox 2 Sierra, so you've got the board that you guys have done.
Yep.
When you talk about that, you know, and I want to be cognizant of your time.
Nice.
When you talk about that, the scene that continued to play back in my mind over and over again as you're discussing and as you're, you know, describing the assess board was Uvalde.
Yeah.
You know, I love listening to people who don't take the time to do their own research and follow the, what the media says or what someone told them. You know, I had a conversation with an individual this weekend that was talking about, oh, yeah, you know, Uvalde, that guy in the barbershop, you know, grabbed that barber's shotgun and went and stopped that shooting. And I said, what? Yeah, that's what happened. I said, no, sir, incorrect. You know, have you read the 77-page report? No.
Clearly not.
I just watched the news. This is what they said. I said, well, I hate to inform you, but that's incorrect. And a couple months back, the city had hired an investigator who's essentially an ambulance chaser out of Austin to come in and pretty much exonerate them, right? You know, hey, your officers did exactly what they were supposed to do. What?
Yeah.
Were you watching the same things that I was watching? And that's neither here nor there. That's a whole other podcast we can talk about. But, you know, one of the things that... like I said, was playing back in my mind as you were talking about that assess board was, you know, first contact, initial response, officers were there within a couple minutes.
Right away.
You know, of him walking in the door and breaching doors 111 and 112, you had officers there with shields.
Right.
In the hallway within 3 minutes. As they started moving down hall, they engaged. Or they were engaged with gunfire that penetrated the drywall. And I'll tell you what I did here a while back. But they started engaging or getting engaged with rounds coming through the drywall. They then lost that momentum. And you and I both know that in a tactical situation, you have to immediately regain that momentum. You can't lose that momentum and then retreat. And that's where that train slowed down so significantly that it never got back in motion again until 77 minutes later, until everybody inside that room was either mortally wounded or was already deceased. And, you know, that's the biggest takeaway is, you know, I get asked all the time with, like, the assess board, do you think that there's a place for it? My answer is yes. That day, your assess board would have come in handy. Right? It absolutely would have worked. Do I think that every school in America should have an assess board? Yeah, I do. Not before they have a plan in place.
Correct.
Though, right?
Yes.
And so our goal is to help them establish that foundation, get their plan in place and all that, you know, all those essential things. And then we start looking at products that we feel can help them. And you put an assess board outside of every SRO's office. They're in their office. They get an alert. Something's going on. They grab that assess board. It's on wheels because it's tactical. And you start moving towards that threat, you're really significantly cutting down that response time, right? And you're providing that protection for that officer to
right.
do, for him or her to do their job. In 2018, 2019, when I got to Texas City, and not a lot of people know this, we kind of briefly touched on it last week in a podcast, but, you know, one of the things that I did was, you know, I had the luxury of sitting down with our architect firm prior to our four new buildings being built. And I approached them and said, you know, from a safety and security perspective, yes, you guys, y'all build beautiful buildings. It's architecturally sound. You're taking into consideration, you know, research back data that talks about glass and, you know, open environments being more appealing and more susceptible to learning. But I'd like to sit down with you and go over your plans, look at different angles, how we can put certain things in place, how you can architecturally design the building to not only, you know, potentially preserve life, but also provide an exigent response to those that are coming, right? And so, of course, I'm talking to architects. No offense, architects, but you know, sometimes you guys are like, yeah, what's this guy talking about? I don't know, you know? And so when I sat down with them, I started looking at angles, and then we started going to schools that were already existing, and I started showing them, okay, from this angle, you're looking at it like a 27%, you know, area of refuge. If we build out a small kick-out wall, like a 3-foot wall, and we make it aesthetically pleasing, you've maximized that angle of visibility and line of sight to where, you know, if you have a sustained event, these kids get antsy, man.
Yep.
You know, they're nervous, they're anxious. Now we've, you know, gone from 23%, you know, where they can hide in this small corner where drills have taught the potential shooter, which 9 times out of 10, it's another kid,
right,
where the victims will be. And that's a whole nother debate. But we've maximized it from like 23% to 45%. So now these, you know, little kids, these babies can lay out if they need to, if it's a sustained attack like Uvalde, which lasted 77 minutes. And so what we did then was we built out a small kick-out wall. The window on the side of the door, it's slipping my mind what those are commonly referred to, but we created it to where an individual could not climb through,
mm-hmm,
by putting some support bars in different angles and making it aesthetically pleasing. We reinforced that glass. We built out that kick out wall, extending that line of sight. And then from the corner of that door all the way down to their hard corner, inside interior wall, we put in a level 8 ballistic, you know, because it's just a matter of time before these kids start getting real smart after a decade of going through these, you know, SRP lockout drills. They're going to now know that if I want to do harm, you know, and you get some kid in Texas who understands, you know, ballistics,
yep,
they know that the rifle round is going to, and most handgun rounds, depending upon the velocity, is going to penetrate drywall. So now I don't really need the door to be open. I'll just shoot through the walls.
Right.
And so, you know, that was always a concern of me, sure, of mine. And so, you know, when I started working with the architect, they said, well, you know, this is going to increase the cost of the build, or we can look at other things that we might be able to cut to absorb that cost. And so that's what we did. So average cost to build each one of those schools was $40 million.
Mm-hmm.
Average cost to install that level of protection in every single classroom total was $750,000, less than $1 million per campus.
You're giving me chills. We were brought in to a school here in Texas,
mm-hmm,
okay, private school that has 8 Montessori style early childhood development classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the youngest kids. It's the kids that you'll have the least.
Defend themselves.
Cannot defend themselves.
Yeah.
All right, and it's a typical layout of, I would say, a Southern or Western style school. It opens to the exterior.
Sure.
It's windows on 2 external walls, right? So we were brought in to bring the assess board there. I gave them an assess board for free just to, mm-hmm, and they still have it, okay? We go into these classrooms and it becomes abundantly clear the assess board's not gonna work in this environment. I have threats coming from 2 completely different, yeah, sides. Right? Even if I back them into a corner, it's not going to work here. And I saw that right away. I go, look, assess board's not going to work in this room. I'm telling you right now. It'll work in other rooms on your massive campus, not in these rooms. And just like you described, I took a look at the room and I'm like, the physical structure and the design and layout right now are perfect. Perfect for us to bring in ballistic panels, secrete them in the walls, add some acrylic, and not change. If the untrained eye, if somebody came, a parent came to that classroom after we were
they
done.
They couldn't see it. They don't know
it's
there.
They have no idea.
They have no idea. I tell you, you know, I get asked that question all the time. In fact, Mike asked me last week, how many teachers at your old district, you know, because there's it's a revolving door in education. You know, teachers come and go nowadays because it's such a hostile environment. How many teachers at those schools do you think are aware of the capabilities and protection that they have? I would venture to say probably not a lot of them.
Right.
Because you know, I don't think that anybody's briefing them. You know, and that's, you know, I'll talk to the school board and see if they're, hey, are y'all telling them, like, hey, you need to be behind this area, whatnot, right? And if you do that, I mean, because here's the other thing, too, is people, you know, the all these challenges I've been pushing out on LinkedIn, people have been like, oh, man, you've kind of been putting people on the spot. I'm not putting people on the spot.
No, you're not.
You're making a claim that your product does X, Y, and Z. I want to see it.
You're offering an opportunity.
Yeah, I want to see it. Like, yeah. Let's see it.
I love
you
that.
Know? And so, you know, when we put in all that material, I shopped around and I took three different products, reputable companies, and I said, don't tell me about it. Send me samples.
Right.
And they sent me samples and we shot them with everything. I mean,
same.
Everything, same. Dude. I mean, I shot them with AR, 5.56, 7.62, 300 Win Mag, shotgun, buckshot, slug, 9mm, 357 SIG, 357 Magnum, 40 caliber, 22 long rifle. I mean, we shot it with everything that we could get our hands on. And what we chose, the product that we chose, not a single round ever penetrated it. And I'm not talking one round, two rounds. We shot the hell out of it.
Same.
You know,
same.
Because I want to see it.
Absolutely.
Because at night when I go to bed, I need to know that if tomorrow something happens, that I know that those kids are safe.
Not only that, if you're responding, are you going to grab, are you going to go in there and feel confident that what you did is going to protect you?
Yeah, because I would be responding.
That was a really important, all right, here's the other thing. You know, part of us connecting is me continuously wanting to learn. Like, I don't think I'm the be-all, end-all. I don't think I'm an expert in anything. I have some knowledge in a few things, and I'm always looking to learn more.
Sure.
And that's how, you know, I reach out on LinkedIn, if nothing else, to gather more information, to get input, advice, criticisms, critiques. I welcome it all. One of the most important pieces of advice we got from law enforcement. So you mentioned the tactical application of the assess board. Interestingly enough, here in Texas, the Beeville Police Department, the chief is Art Gamez, the captain is Ryan Trevino. We did a training together with Kyle Morgan of Blue Bearing Solutions. We did his protector mindset and active shooter response. Kudos to the Beeville Police Department. They're a tiny little Texas town, probably similar to Uvalde, right? The police officers are SROs in the schools that their children attend.
Sure.
It's very personal. These guys train. It's incredible how well trained they are.
How important do you think leadership is in that decision making process?
Oh my gosh.
Because if you look at the United States as a whole. One of the things that I've just recently been appointed and elected to the National Council for School National Council for School Safety Directors was established by Zero Now, a 501c6 nonprofit, and the goal is to establish a standard for school security or school safety and security directors, because if you go to a lot of districts in the K-12 space, they don't have a school security director, or they have someone that's promoted from within the educational space. And though I believe that that individual who's in that space absolutely needs to have some understanding of how K-12 works, because, man, when I came straight from the government into K-12, oh, man, I thought, boy, did I ever have it wrong. I mean, I came in, I was the hammer, man. Like, I'm gonna tell them that this is what you have to do, and they're gonna do it. Negative. It did not work that way. I tell you, man, I look back at I was so cocky back then to think that I was gonna come in to another profession and that they were gonna just do what I told them. Like, you know, like take orders.
Yeah.
And they're all well-intended, but it doesn't work that way in K-12. And so I don't want to say that I take pleasure in watching other people fail. It's not their failing. It's the uncomfortableness of watching people that have, they're so convicted on some of these things, and then they come into K-12 and they try to impose their will from a law enforcement or military background, and then they just get completely annihilated by K-12. Dude, let me tell you, K-12 people are another breed.
Without a doubt.
They are another breed, man. They don't give a damn. They're going to do what they want to do. They'll take your advice, and then they're going to make their decision. You know, fantastic people in the K-12 space. You know, what I had to learn was how to adapt to it, not them adapt to me. I have to adapt to K-12 being a security professional. Because if you think that you're going to come into K-12 and they're going to adapt to you, you're going to fail miserably.
It's interesting you say that. I didn't realize it at the time, but when I was a prosecutor, before I left being a prosecutor, I was in charge of the School Advocacy Bureau. So our prosecutor's office had a specific bureau dedicated to crimes related to school, on school grounds, mm-hmm. or juveniles treated as adults. So I can attest to what you're saying in real time and in real world scenarios, in that, you know, prosecuting regular cases and everyday individuals had nothing to prepare me for the school realm. They operate by a whole different set of rules and regulations, and the way that they had at the time, they had their own school safety agents in New York City, which were essentially deputized but unarmed
security officers.
Yeah, but they were uneducated. They were not trained well. They gave them a uniform and a nightstick.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, it was not good at all.
How many of them did you have to prosecute?
The actual school safety agents?
None. No. I'm surprised.
No. Yeah. But, you know, we had metal detectors back then. You're talking 20-some-odd years ago. That didn't stop knives from getting into schools.
Yeah.
And I remember distinctly prosecuting some incredibly violent crimes in the schools themselves. A fight, one kid pulled out a Bowie knife and slashed another kid in the stomach. And his intestines came out. He was holding his intestines, survived, you know, but I had to go visit him in the office for my grand jury presentation. I mean, scarred for life, staples across his whole stomach.
And the weapon got through the metal detector.
Yes.
Right. And so.
And it's a Bowie knife. This was not like a small.
Now, this
knife.
Is a fixed blade,
yep.
probably an 8 to 10 inch hunting knife.
Yeah.
You know, this is not something that you can slip in your pocket or, you know, put in a concealed, you know, compartment in your backpack. And that's, you know, people get angry at me because I'm just not jumping right on this bandwagon of putting, you know, metal detectors in schools. And those that are really pushing for that have never worked in a school. They don't understand, you know, that there are so many moving parts.
Right.
You know, in order to do it effectively, you have to absolutely have control of that entire environment, like a courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Most weapons, I think there's been a couple weapons get through, but I think there were some other outlying factors of how they got in. But for the, you know, for the most part, secure areas like the White House, okay, you know, outside weapons aren't getting through there. Because we control it. In a school, like our old high school, had 50, almost 60 doors. So I'm going to establish, you know, 3 checkpoints. And I'm going to think that, you know, just because I say that you can't go out any of the other doors, that their kids are going to be compliant with that? No.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Not going to happen.
Right.
But yet you have companies that are selling these things that, you know, are going in and they're talking to these you know, superintendents, they're talking to these purchasing officers, or they're talking to law enforcement officers who in theory and in concept it works, but in reality it's just not effective.